across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Who begins this hour by offering apologies to causing a near heart attack for Aaron Zommers when I stepped out of the picture about 10 seconds before we started the top of the hour here. But I'd forgotten my coffee cup. I needed that. So I got back just in time,
Aaron.
Yeah, you got to have all the things. You got to have coffee, and you got to have a host who shows up on time. I try to do those things. Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Friday, September 1st. It's September already. And because it's the first day of the month, all those national calendars, those national days and everything, there's a lot of them. Bear with me. But every one of these, for somebody, it's their big day. This is, I'm going to need Aaron's reaction to these, so let me bring him up here so I can see him. Okay, it's American Chess Day. All right, fine. It's Cherry Popover Day. I don't know why September 1st. Today's Ginger Cat Appreciation Day.
As in just like an orange cat?
Yes. Yep. You got one of those ginger cats. You should appreciate it today. You should appreciate any day you have a cat and it hasn't, you know, killed and eaten you. It's National Food Bank Day. It's National Little Black Dress Day. That one's interesting. It's National Pink Cadillac Day.
I don't think I'll be celebrating either of the last two.
The Little Black Dress or the Pink Cadillac?
Yeah, I don't really have either.
No. Today is World Letter Writing Day. And honestly, I'm in that last generation that actually knew the joy of getting a letter in the mail from somebody. It was, you know, written by hand. How are you? Gave you an update. That's long gone. I mean, that's not coming back. But I'm glad they have a day to appreciate what we used to have once upon a time.
I've still done it sometimes with a few of my friends from college, but it's rare. The last time I really had a back and forth correspondence is when I had a pen pal in sixth grade with someone in Japan who was learning English.
Yeah. I mean,
that was cool.
And my wife had a foreign exchange student brother from Spain. And so, yeah, once a year or so, the family will get this long handwritten letter from Gus explaining all that's been going on. So, yeah, that's good. And today is also, again, you talk about obscure, but for somebody, this is very important. Today is Building and Code Staff Appreciation Day. For all the people who are engaged in building, zoning, and securing buildings and keeping them up to code. So good on all of you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, and again, I'm not making light of it. The buildings around here don't just fall down like they do in some other places. You actually need standards and you need good people. So if any of those are your day, by all means, enjoy them. Coming up this hour, it shouldn't be hard to recognize that not every American would protect and defend our democracy. There are some Americans who, even though their life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness is a product of our democracy, some would willingly overthrow free elections. And some of those people are in some powerful or influential positions. And yet some newsrooms insist on treating them as just another day in American politics, just another day in the Republican Party, when there are plenty of Republicans who are saying, no, we're still very much on team democracy over here. So there have been a couple of new columns by media critics all but begging newsrooms to stop normalizing authoritarianism. And we're going to talk to Mark Jacob about that down at the bottom of the hour. We'll talk about Dan Schumacher and sports. And some news that he's sharing ever since taking the position of athletic director at Northland College up in Ashland, and they're trying to do some new things, some rather big things, and you know that involves change, and change involves, you know, people with questions, and so that's part of what Dan's new role is. So I kind of figure I feel like we're the behind the scenes documentary in the making about a new athletic director going to a new school, taking what he's learned at, you know, 3-4 other schools, all the teams that he's built, the national championships that he's won, and now he's going to this, you know, tiny school up in Ashland and is looking to build things there for particular reasons that aren't always obvious, that it's not just about the sports and the competition on the field, but the new students that attracts and the tuition that they bring and things like that. So we'll probably talk about a little of that with Dan Schumacher coming up as well. But speaking of sports, and I neglected to mention this in the last hour, Wisconsin Badger football kicks off tomorrow, 2:30 on stations across the Civic Media Radio Network. You can catch the Badgers on WRJR in Racine, WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids, WLAK in Amory, and WRCE in Richland Center. And Badger football games can also be streamed on the Civic Media app. If you don't have the Civic Media app, and if you either enjoy the Badgers or high school football, you really want to get that app. Download that sometime today, because for the Civic Media stations that also carry and cover high school football, you'll find those games being streamed on the app. And in a couple of instances, we have stations that can actually cover more than one game. And so they have multiple channels on the app so that you can follow your local team, even if they're on the road and you can't travel along. So again, go to civicmedia.us or your app store and get details on downloading the Civic Media app for high school football and for Badger football. And we'll have to talk to Kristen Lyerly at some point. She was at the Gophers football game last night for their season opener, and apparently they stunned Nebraska with a game-winning field goal as time expired, I think. So we'll see if she stayed there or if she actually went to that Duran Duran concert instead. We'll ask her about that next week. All right, we'll unpack the news and more coming up and check the weatherology forecast. Wherever you're listening this morning, when you're here, you're up north. We'll be back. Is it deja vu? Is it a rerun of the last hour? No. It's September. All right, heading into the Labor Day weekend here. And look, we are not one of those places that, you know, likes to play blame the weather person when the weather's terrible. Jennifer does not ever have to hear people going, oh, it's raining on Labor Day weekend or Memorial Day weekend, it's your fault, because we know it's not her fault. But by that same token, Jennifer, don't you wish you could kind of take a little bit of credit for this coming up weekend and go, yeah, I did that. This beautiful, warm weekend, this is all me. That'd be nice for you, wouldn't it?
It would be. When it's really nice, I would love the credit, absolutely. But it doesn't seem to happen that way.
No, it does not. But, you know, we're going to give you some partial credit anyway, because whether you caused it or not, you are going to be the messenger for a nice little weekend forecast. Tell us all about it.
It is, yeah. Well, for today, we're looking at sunny skies and warmer overall today as that warm front is pushing through. Low to mid 80s for most, our cool spot in Oshkosh with highs in the upper 70s. Continuing to warm for the Labor Day weekend ahead. Sunny for southern Wisconsin with highs in the upper 80s to low 90s. Our hottest spot in Richland Center with highs in the mid 90s tomorrow. Upper 80s to low 90s expected for everyone else. Slight chance for showers and storms for central and west central Wisconsin to start off the holiday weekend. Sunny for everyone on Sunday, though. Even hotter as that warm front goes through the area, mid to upper 90s expected. Then high pressure settles into control to start out the new week on Labor Day. Sunny skies expected for the holiday with highs remaining in the 90s, ranging from low to upper, with our hottest spot in the upper 90s around Wisconsin Rapids. Then after that, once most people start to return to work on Tuesday, another day of sunshine with highs mostly in the mid to low 90s.
Mid to low 90s for early September. That is, that's impressive. And there will be some kind of a shift in gears at some point, but we will really enjoy this for this weekend. Jennifer, thanks so much. Hope you have a great weekend.
Thanks so much. You too.
All right. Jennifer joining us, Jennifer Vucicki from Weatherology here with us as she is every morning at about this time. All right. Let's get to the subject of protecting democracy, and that sometimes that has to be done through the legal system, as we're witnessing with former President Trump. But it also is still incumbent on the voters. So we'll talk about that next. And then in our next segment with Mark Jacob, we'll talk about how protecting democracy is also a role of newsrooms, or at least it should be. So we'll set aside the courts, we'll set aside the newsrooms, and talk just about the voters. Wherever voters are, even if you're in a place that is, in this case, deeply red Republican conservative, there is still a role for voters to play in protecting democracy. There's an article in what's called Bolts Magazine, and the headline is, an Iowa county, not Iowa County, Wisconsin, a county in Iowa, an Iowa county just stopped an election denier from overseeing the 2024 election. And it was all about a gentleman named David Whipple, who in the days after the 2020 election had these Facebook posts that were making false claims about the election results in other states, saying some terrible things about, you know, Joe Biden. But 3 years later, in June of this year, David Whipple was able to clinch a goal, the magazine writes, that many election deniers have pursued. He took over the local office that runs elections. When the longtime Democratic auditor of Iowa's Warren County retired before finishing her term, Whipple, it says here, a businessman, applied for the job, and the all-Republican County Board of Supervisors appointed him. And so in this role, Whipple was set to oversee voter registration, handle the ballots, process the results, all during next year's presidential race. But that is where people interested in protecting democracy stepped up, knowing who he was and knowing a bit about his history. Led by local Democrats, they collected thousands of signatures in a very brief 2-week window that was allowed and forced a special election for auditor. Because of the way the rules are written in the state of Iowa, they could do that. Because after all, this county, which is south of Des Moines, had once upon a time backed Barack Obama in the 2008 election. But in 2020, it went Trump by 17 points. And yet, despite that huge shift in voter sentiment, the Democrats there still placed a bet, basically, that most of the voters in that county would see that David Whipple was out of step with their mainstream value about democracy. There was a lot of organizing, and the voters recently resoundingly ousted Whipple, and will put a Democrat in that office instead. And this is not about a party. This is about democracy itself and the people who continue to spread the big lie, people who were all in favor of early voting until Donald Trump said he was against it. People who were all in favor of drop boxes as a matter of convenience until Donald Trump said he was against it. And a host of other things that, again, are not borne out by any evidence. And that's the important thing here, is the utter lack of evidence. And again this week in Madison, the State Senate Elections Committee heard from, as we told you yesterday, a clown car full of conspiracy theorists who came back to Wisconsin to again share some of their same claims, again not backed with evidence. And our favorite was the one guy who said, we've got the evidence, we can't show it here. People need to sign like non-disclosure agreements and you know, things like that, and then we'll show it to you, and boy, it'll you know, blow the barn doors off. Well, if it's really going to do that, and if it's that important to your view of election integrity, might I suggest you present the evidence, you know, truly put up or shut up, because we've already seen how democracy can be altered by something as age old as gerrymandering, as rigging the maps. That part has been legal for far too long, going far too deep in terms of how you redraw maps, but people got to draw the line at putting conspiracy theorists into office, and especially offices that handle our elections. As far as those Wisconsin maps go, it now appears, according to an article by Molly Beck from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, that taxpayers, you and I, are now on track to pay about $2 million for outside attorneys that are going to be hired by Republican legislative leaders to defend the current rigged maps in new challenges that have been filed since the state Supreme Court flipped away from conservative control. And that's a total cost that could, again, only grow higher from the party that claims fiscal responsibility, claims to be fiscal conservatives, says, we don't have money to give to the Brewer Stadium. We don't have money to give to saving affordable child care in Wisconsin. By the way, we did have money for Foxconn, $3 billion. We did have a plan for $3 billion in tax cuts geared to the very wealthy. But there is no money here for child care and things like that. But there is money to pay all of these private attorneys. One of them, $1.8 million, is going to go to one law firm. Another law firm is going to charge $450 an hour for attorney's time on defending the indefensible, the maps that currently exist right now, the maps that allow Republicans to have upwards of two-thirds of the seats in the Wisconsin legislature, while not even having majority support, by and large, when you look at the entire state. And again, we have Republicans that would say, well, you know, if you set aside Madison and Milwaukee and Eau Claire and the big cities, no, we don't do that. We don't do that. We're all Wisconsinites. We all get a vote. And when we all get a vote statewide, you can't gerrymander that. You can't gerrymander a state, nor can you gerrymander a court. We had an election. Janet Protasiewicz won that election by 11 points in a swing state. She won by 11 points. She won overwhelmingly, even acknowledging that the current maps are rigged, without casting aspersions on the legality of any future challenge to the maps. She said it was pretty obvious that they're rigged. Every outside analysis of the maps shows they are among the most rigged in the country. Now, still, the old Supreme Court and the conservatives on the U.S. Supreme Court upheld those maps based on challenges brought under the U.S. Constitution. And that's fine. That's over. That's done. This new challenge is rooted firmly in the Wisconsin Constitution and the safeguards that are in there that call for everybody having an equal right to vote, and it gets to the matter of districts should be, you know, contiguous and compact and everything like that. And so let's not cast any aspersions on the people who brought the first challenges to the map. They thought that going through the U.S. Constitution and the rights and protections that we think are in there would have been a logical first step. And frankly, we deserved better than a state Supreme Court and a U.S. Supreme Court that would find a way to make up a reason not to get involved in fixing maps that were so blatantly rigged. So Janet Protasiewicz was stating the obvious, but then also saying, I'll look at this case when it comes up. We'll look at the language in the Wisconsin Constitution and then make a decision on this particular case. But for Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and for other leading Republicans in the legislature, they're saying that Protasiewicz's remark is grounds for her impeachment if she doesn't recuse herself from a challenge to the maps, which is rather rich coming from a bunch that has all but admitted that they rigged the maps. We've got a guy who has a talk show on this station in the early afternoons who was in the room with Republican legislators as they laughed out loud about the way they were drawing the maps and how it was going to lock in power for them, disproportionate to their actual support of Wisconsin voters. They know they're guilty of this. They know they had a friendly court before. They know they don't have a friendly court now. And as a result, they're making all this noise. They're getting set to spend $2 million of your money to defend these maps in court. And they're trying to gerrymander the court by saying if Janet Protasiewicz doesn't recuse herself, they're going to impeach her. This court with her on it has not heard a single case yet. She's been in office exactly 1 month. and they're talking about impeaching her. So again, when it comes to protecting and defending democracy, it is on every voter. It is on newsrooms. It is on our law enforcement system. And frankly, it is on people who have any influence with their Republican legislators to say, do not do that. We are on team democracy here in Wisconsin. We'll have more with Mark Jacob coming up after this break. You're up north.
Summer has come and passed. The innocent can never last. Wake me up when September ends.
I don't know what it is about September that lends itself to music. We had See You in September yesterday, Earth, Wind, and Fire, Green Day. Just something about the transition of it. And we're... In America, we make this transition in the fall from a political standpoint into election season. And even though the next presidential election is a year out, there are still plenty of voices that are reminding us not to cover what's happening right now and what's going to be happening next year as just another election. And so before I bring Mark Jacob in, I mentioned over the past couple of days here that there had been a couple of columns, and Mark is mentioned in one of them, by people who are saying with all earnestness to newsrooms to stop covering politics the way that you used to. One of them is by Will Bunch in the Philadelphia Inquirer, who points out that the U.S. media is still doing a terrible job explaining what's really happening. He really calls out Peter Baker of the New York Times for just a terrible article last weekend that bases everybody's negative feelings in tribalism. Again, the both sides-ism, rather than calling out the authoritarian aspects that are dominating the Republican Party today. And Dan Frumkin over at PressWatchers.org has a similar column of how newsrooms can be covering politics better in this day and age. And Mark was quoted in there, and we'll bring him in here now to talk a bit more about that. Mark, how are you?
Hi, Pat. I'm doing great.
All right. Well, again, how do we take this and keep it from being redundant? I think that it is just a matter of not worrying about the redundancy. There's a thing about messaging we've learned in politics, and people in news are slowly realizing it as well, is that it's only after you're getting sick of saying something over and over again that a few people are just starting to tune in and pay attention and go, oh yeah, there might be something going on here. And, you know, in the case of media coverage, it's getting them to cover... Is it Jay Rosen, another media critic, who talked about the odds? Don't cover the odds, yes, but the stakes. Can you explain what he meant by that?
So Jay is one of the best media critics, and he's a professor at NYU. And he says, you know, cover the stakes, not the odds. And what he means is, instead of it turning it into a horse race or a sporting event where you're wondering who's going to win, who got the advantage, you know, who is with the winners and losers in yesterday's debates, that you focus on what is the stakes, what is the outcome of this election, what are we risking losing, what are we hoping to gain from this election, what will happen if one candidate wins, what will happen if one issue wins, you know, real things that matter to real people. It's not exactly revolutionary, Pat, to actually think that journalists ought to worry about what regular people are worrying about, but unfortunately you have this Washington political media mindset that just looks at everything as some in a very cynical, transactional way, as, you know, winners and losers and who got an advantage and all this stuff. When, you know, I often say nobody cares whether Nancy Pelosi won or lost or Kevin McCarthy. They don't care about that. They care whether they're going to get a cap on their insulin for Medicare. They care whether, you know, their education of their kids is going to be good. I mean, it's exasperating to me that the media fails to focus on what regular people think.
And that gets into the next part of the Dan Frumkin article, and this is where you're quoted, and it's about setting the agenda. And too often, newsrooms, national newsrooms, TV newsrooms, allow themselves to be guided, to basically be grabbed, you know, by the nose by any politician and said, here, you're going to cover this thing, when newsrooms have agency. Newsrooms right. can say, here's the agenda that we should be covering. And that's part of what you talked about. Again, that connection to regular folks.
Right. And it's because everyone gets distracted. And I think there is a lot of politics of distraction now. And especially Fox News and the right wing love to just kind of come up with a kind of a crazy issue of the day. You know, the whole thing of, you know, well, they're going to ration your beer, that kind of, you know, just nutty stuff where they take something out of context and try to turn that into the issue of the day. And they're doing that because the Republicans in Congress aren't doing anything. They're not passing any laws that help anyone. They're all like, you're trying to investigate people. They're trying to investigate the investigators. They're complaining about this and that. They're worried about, you know, beer rationing. I mean, so if the news media follow that, they're just being led by the nose, and they don't have their eyes on the ball. This is what the value of news media, if they're doing it the right way, is that they've been around a while. They've seen, you know, legislation pass and not pass for decades, and they know what the issues are. They've talked to experts. They understand what skyrocketing prescription drug prices mean to regular people, and they can focus on stuff like that actually matters. But if they're too busy, like, you know, chasing goofy stuff, then all the American public gets is goofy stuff.
Then when we get to the notion of another piece of advice is to focus on the greatest threats, it seems a lot easier for some politicians to say the greatest threat is creeping socialism or litter boxes in our classrooms, when right. the actual greater threats are maybe larger and complex, climate change being, you know, perhaps tops among them. They're tougher to explain, but they are actual threats. And just because they're tougher to explain in a soundbite doesn't mean you should go cover the made up issues that are because it's easier to demonize people.
Right. I mean, exactly. And, you know, and you think about 10 or 20 years ago when people were talking about climate change, and a lot of people said, oh, it's just made up. You know, you're just worried about something that's, you know, these wonky scientists are saying something. Well, now we're starting to see it, in real time. And we are certainly going to see more of it. And people need to get serious about it. And that's the thing. That's where the news media can do what politicians don't want to do, which is focus on issues that matter to people. And, I would just like to see that more. And, you know, and an election is perfect for that. When I was an editor at the Chicago Tribune, I actually created a grid where you had all the candidates and you had all the issues, and you had where they stood on the issue, you know, in the little boxes where people could find that out, which I thought was extremely useful. But politicians hate that stuff. They don't want that. They don't want to, like, be pinned down on the issues. And that's what the news media needs to do. And Pat, another thing is, and Will Bunch gets to this, we're in a gigantic crisis. This could be the most important election of our lifetimes, probably will be. And I mean, what happened, you know, 2.5 years ago? There was an assault on our democracy, a violent, deadly assault on our democracy. People died. And we need to, like, take that seriously. And the thing that gets me is I understand why somebody who doesn't care about politics and, you know, only wants to play, you know, play softball and watch movies and all that is not focusing on the threat to democracy. But I don't understand why political reporters in Washington, D.C. are not focusing on the threat to democracy. It just should be slapping them in the face every day. It's the most important story of their lifetime. If they're journalists and they like interesting news, it's certainly interesting. So what are they doing? Why are they trying to normalize a horrible extremist threat to our democracy?
Well, and I think, again, it's that we have had this change of direction in what media was. It was once upon a time, we're going to gather news about these important things and we're going to deliver it to you. And now it's instead of, you know, here's what you need, it's saying, well, what do you want? And mm-hmm. they say, well, we want, they don't think about threats to democracy. And that gets to the heart of the section here about the missing voter interviews. In other words, We are still talking to Trump supporters at a diner in, you know, rural Missouri. And we're not hearing from basically the other half of America, the voters there, who have their own concerns and their own anxieties. But for whatever reason, their voices are not heard nearly to the degree as the people in a diner someplace.
Well, the odd thing about that is, I think that part of the explanation of that is that these journalists are, that they actually personally probably, you know, lean to the left a little bit because, you know, they're college graduates, almost all of them, and college graduates do lean to the left. So it's, you know, just demographically, they probably lean to the left a little bit, and they probably understand what Democratic voters in this country are worried about. And so the odd thing about that is because they understand that, they don't cover it. But the Trump people who are, you know, very extreme and are, you know, and trying to, you know, cover up the history of racism in this country and doing all, and trying to keep women, you know, imprisoned in their states so they give birth. And, you know, that it seems weird to these journalists. And so they go and cover it. So, oh, they, you know, they do the anthropological visit to the diner someplace.
Or they cover, you know, a country singer's song, you know, Rich Men North of Richmond.
Right.
And if you're Fox News, you actually start the debate
right
with reaction to a song. And by the way, engaging in wild misinterpretation of the song, as Oliver Anthony had to say afterwards, saying, this isn't a partisan song. And it gets back to, he was trying to express the anxiety of voters. But we're not asking those voters enough about what's the anxiety. It's not the anxiety that a politician tells them they're anxious about. It's the fact that some corporation is underpaying them, is misclassifying them, or whatever the case may be.
Well, that's why, you know, I've been telling people this for years. When I was a Metro editor at the Tribune in Chicago, I used to say this all the time, but you know, that nobody cares what the politician thinks. Go find a real person who exemplifies the issue. You know, I mean, this old Hakeem Jeffries thinks that we might pass this. No, go out to Dubuque or someplace and talk to somebody who is rationing their health care because they don't have enough money. And what would it matter if there was a $30 a month cap on their insulin? I mean, what would it matter? How would it improve their life? How would it improve their health? How would it improve their lifespan? Ask questions like that. Go just knock on doors and go into people's homes. But the problem is that political coverage, political journalism in this country has become this kind of industry where it's so insular. You know, we got a bunch of polls here. We're going to talk to you about the polls. And, you know, and where we have all these pundits and we have all these and analysts who we, you know, that you can get a dial a quote from. You can call them up and they'll tell you something. And so it's become this very insular thing where political journalism, it's stunningly separated from regular people and what their concerns are. And that's a danger. That's a super danger right now when we're, you know, when there's a clear ongoing assault on democracy.
I've already picked on the New York Times once. I'm going to do it again here because, as Dan Frumkin pointed out, and you repeated, and I saw it. Here's a New York Times headline that talks about Vivek Ramaswamy. The headline says, "Emulating Trump, Ramaswamy shows a penchant for dispensing with the facts." I'm sorry, dispensing with the facts? That's a New York Times headline?
Oh yeah, they do stuff like that all the time. Not a close relationship with the truth, you know, that kind of thing. There's, in fact, I've started collecting them, and I'm probably going to write a column for Courier Newsroom next week about the New York Times and about their, you know, how their headlines, especially, and even their copy, they just don't want to get to the issue, and they're afraid to say the word lies. You know, it's everything's got to be like sanded off, you know, and smooth.
Except when they're covering the economy.
Yeah.
As evidenced by this other headline, "Inflation has been easing fast, but wild cards lie ahead." What? Why can't you just say inflation has been easing? That's the actual news, not your, again, couching it in, whatever it is about rooting for a, you know, a recession to come up. It's, yeah, it's these things and more that are going to keep us busy all throughout the, you know, the next 14 months here. And Mark, I'm really glad that you're here to help us cover these things and try to keep folks honest and get the coverage we deserve. We deserve better coverage.
Thank you, sir.
Have a great holiday
weekend.
Talk to
you later, Pat.
All right. Okay. We'll see you later. Mark Jacob there. He'll join us again on Fridays, and we appreciate that very much. When we come back, noted Cubs fan Dan Schumacher will crow about the series. He'll also tell us he thinks the Bears are going to win the Super Bowl, and then we'll talk about the more serious aspects of his new job up at Northland College coming up after this. You're Up North. I know Dan put in a request for a Grateful Dead tune. I forgot to tell Aaron, so we're left to guess what we've got here this morning, Mr. Schumacher. What do you got for us?
It's China Cats.
Okay, very nice.
China Cat.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get the rough stuff out of the way. Dan and I were, as often happens on a Thursday night, where we might have been at a local watering hole talking about what to discuss today. And we noticed that in a couple of different places where we go, the jukebox has this weird quirk. It seems like somebody plays, you know, something like Go Cubs Go, or what's that Bear Down Chicago Bears. There's apparently an algorithm in the jukebox that whenever that song comes on, it's immediately followed by that song, The Bears Still Suck. And so I don't know what's going on with these jukeboxes, Dan, but we'll try to fix those before the next time we're out and about.
That's some good stuff. That's funny. That's true. We did listen to all three songs last night in a row.
Well, you earned a playing one of them for your team. And look, you're the one that
the 10th can't come close. I mean, it can't come soon enough.
Oh, I know. But you know Wrigley, you know, as well as anybody. And the quirks of that park, the way the wind was blowing in game two of that series, and then the funny little bounces and ricochets that come in there. You know, say what you will about a ballpark that dates back to 1912, but, you know, there's going to be some interesting quirks in a game that's played there.
I couldn't believe the way that last game ended.
Yeah, with the ricochet off the pitcher's ankle.
His ankle, yeah. I mean, just unbelievable how that could happen. And because two pitches earlier, one of the stupidest calls I've ever seen, which was the bunt. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're dead to right out of the at home plate, so... We got lucky at the end.
Well, that's what you got.
Lucky better than me, better than being good.
In these close games in the division, you got to take whatever luck that you can get. We've got college football that started. I actually just got a text from Kristen Lyerly. Apparently, she did not ever get to the Duran Duran concert. She stuck around for the big finish as the Gophers walked it off against Nebraska with a field goal as time expired. So the Big Ten season is already underway with a little bit of drama, even before the Badgers kick off tomorrow.
You know, you said, yep, last week was Notre Dame, USC kicking off the whole season, and those were a couple of blowouts. But the side note that maybe we didn't talk about last night, Pat, that involves Nebraska, have you seen the pictures and the video of 92,000 people to see college volleyball games?
Yeah, that was extremely cool.
Oh, it gave me chills watching how they did the intros for it too, as they're walking down like the football hallways and out to the stadium. And what was even neater is that they had games before there that were Division II game and a Division III game.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, see, that's great, because again, you think, are 92,000 people really going to show up for a single volleyball match? No, there was an undercard. I like that.
You make a
full routine of it. And lest I forget, Badger football, again, the kickoff is tomorrow at 2:30. You can hear the games on the Civic Media Radio Network on WRJN Racine, WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, WLAK Amory, and WRCE Richland Center, and Badger football games can be streamed on the Civic Media app. So get your butt over there. And I also told people earlier this hour, but I'm going to mention it again, the Brewers game Sunday, it's actually a noon game instead of 1 o'clock because it's the game on Peacock. And so you got to either have the streaming service or you got to sign up to get an account or something. So it's a bit of a pain, but that'll be the deal on Sunday's game. I've actually gotten used to Friday night games when they're on Apple TV, but because I have Apple TV on my iPhone, but it's just some days between that and YouTube, you never know where you're going to find a game sometimes.
Yeah, no kidding. Twitter. How about Twitter? Twitter puts on games.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they're going to be more like that. Yeah. I mentioned at the top of the hour that you've got you've got a new school that you're at, some new duties, and this week it was making the announcement to faculty and staff at Northland College and to the greater Ashland community that, you know, not only are you there to help build up the sports programs and even add some sports, but that you actually are talking about the F word up there, and that would be football.
Yeah, that's the word. That's the terminology we use. And yesterday was faculty welcome back day at the school, and every institution does it in the beginning of the year. The chancellor or the president gathers the entire faculty there for a blue gold breakfast. Was before, this was the same way, a little half a day of kumbaya, and then since I am a new executive there and one other person. We were asked to present our vision for our departments in our areas, which mine covers admissions and athletics and advancement. And so, we did. We announced a month ago that we're starting college wrestling, both the reinstating the men's program and adding the women's program. We should have a coach hired the next couple of weeks, but we also are going down the road because of enrollment. And every school is dying for enrollment right now. No different than UW-Eau Claire starting all those sports I did. To gain enrollment. This is in the same boat. And that's got a chance to bring 100 males to campus, a brand new football stadium that was built by an alumnus. So that was before COVID. And so now we're going to go down that aisle to see if this is going to be feasible financially. And we need the buy-in from the faculty and the rest of the community to make it a go.
And this is not, as I was discussing earlier, not just for the sake of a sport, but this is, in fact, a matter of business to the entire college, to any entire college. Correct. As you've said repeatedly, when you bring in new sports, you bring in more athletes who are paying tuition. You bring in other people who are interested in it. I was talking to somebody up in the ranks at the UW system about the budget crises that they're facing at Oshkosh and Parkside. And he, we were talking about how enrollment is doing just what you've said on this show repeatedly, is that enrollment is not sustainable for a lot of these current budgets unless you're doing something. It might be adding sports. It might be adding some other program. It might be letting some other programs go. But the enrollment numbers don't lie. And so you pick a direction, and your direction there is to expand enrollment through sports participation.
Yes, it is. It's actually cheaper than adding any kind of academic programming. So say a college of nursing or something like that. That is a long road to put together, but it's a very profitable and it's always well attended. And nurses are everywhere. You're always on a waiting list to get into a school. But, I said it before, 2025 is the big test for higher education. It's called the enrollment cliff. And it's because the 2008 birth rate dropped out of sight countrywide because of the recession. And with that, it's affecting every school across the nation. And if you're a small liberal arts school like a Northland, you got to find a way to survive. And the general enrollment is just not there. I think there's going to be almost 90,000 less high school graduates in 2025 in the state of Wisconsin alone.
Well, that's where, again, you need ideas one way or another. So this is certainly something we're going to follow over the months and years, I think, ahead of time. Dan, thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
You
got some big fun
plans.
All right, travel safe. We'll talk to you later. And thanks to all of you for being here. Tuesday, we'll talk to Hans Breitenmoser. We'll learn about Leadership Green Bay and more. Have a very happy and safe Labor Day weekend. No live show Monday. We'll be back here on Tuesday morning.